There is this thing. Do you realize?
Our consciousness is affected.
There is this thing.
On.
There is this thing going on.
What?
Do you realize?
Our consciousness is affected.
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news brought to you live. Live.
Five oh two p.m. You're tuned into Off the Hour, CKUT 90.3 FM on this Tuesday, July the 25th. We bring you Tadaman Radio, focusing on issues in Lebanon and the Middle East. We have a show packed full of guests. We're going to be doing a live panel, guests here from Montreal and Beirut, talking about the current situation, the crisis unfolding as we speak in Lebanon and Palestine. So do stay with us. And if you want to get in touch with the Community News Collective, you can do so by calling 514-398-6788 or emailing us at news@ckut.ca. We'll be right back. p.m. on a rainy Tuesday. You're tuned into Off the Hour, CKUT 90.3 FM. And on this Tuesday, we bring you a special segment. This is Radio Tadaman. For the next hour, will be hosted by myself, Aaron Lakoff, and Jerome Shaoui. Jerome.
Tadaman, which means solidarity in Arabic, is a Montreal-based collective of social justice organizers and media activists working to build relationships of solidarity with grassroots political movements for social and economic justice between Beirut and Montreal. In the context of historical political changes taking place in Lebanon, Tadaman, through its political work, aims to support struggles for social justice and human rights of all people living in Lebanon through direct coordination and organization between activists in Beirut and Montreal. In Montreal, Tadaman aims to organize within the Lebanese diaspora through popular education, cultural work, and political action, which addresses struggles facing the Lebanese community, such as immigration, racism, poverty, and labor rights. Through organizing work both locally and internationally, Tadaman aligns itself with social justice movements in Lebanon, Canada, and internationally, which are anti-capitalist and anti-authoritarian in nature.
Now into its 14th day, the Israeli offensive in Lebanon has devastated the country. Major roads, ports, gas and power stations, apartment buildings and factories, as well as the only international airport in Beirut, have all been hit in the major offensive launched on July 12th, following the kidnapping of two Israeli soldiers on the southern border of Lebanon by Hezbollah. Over 500,000 people have been displaced from the south of the country and the southern suburbs of Beirut, creating a potentially catastrophic humanitarian situation. Today we'll be joined by guests from Beirut as well as here in Montreal. But before we go to our guests, we wanted to mention an upcoming demonstration that will be taking place in Ottawa this coming Thursday. And it's a demonstration that's going to be held at the Department of Foreign Affairs to protest not only the Israeli assault on the Gaza Strip and Lebanon, but to also put pressure on the Canadian government to condemn Israel for these war crimes and to challenge the position of our Prime Minister Stephen Harper, who until this point and continues to be accomplice to Israel's actions by giving his support to the Israeli state and the Israeli army for the current aggression that is taking place. So there will be buses going to Ottawa from Montreal this coming Thursday, July the 27th. The gathering point is 8:30 a.m. at 3300 Cremazie East. That's near Metro Saint-Michel. The buses leave Montreal at 9 o'clock sharp and return that same evening. If you want to reserve a seat on the buses, you can call 514-222-0205 or 514-586-4415. Again, 514-222-0205 or 514-586-4415. And this is a demonstration that's been called by a few different organizations, including Tadaman, the Association des Etudiants Libanais Musulmans, and the Al-Hadaya Association. Just before we go to our guests, we're going to first take a small musical break. This is Feruz. We'll be right back here on Radio Tadaman, CKUT 90.3 FM.
تدور في أروقة المعاصي
Today on Radio Tadaman, live from Beirut, we have Bassem Sheet from the Sinai Relief Center, who's providing support for the thousands of refugees coming into central Beirut. Also with us is Hisham Shafidin, Lebanese journalist based in Montreal, who has been closely following the events currently unfolding in the Middle East. But first, let's go to Bassem for a look into the ground situation in Beirut right now. Hi, Bassem.
Hi.
Hi, can you tell us a bit first about what is exactly the Sinai Relief Center?
Well, it's a center that started off from an open incident against the Israeli aggression on Gaza on July 12th, on the same day the Israeli aggression started on Lebanon. So directly the sit-in transformed from a sit-in to an information point forwarding refugees into public schools and then to a relief center just came out of a sudden, yani, of directly from the ground.
We've been hearing reports of hundreds of thousands of refugees being displaced in Lebanon right now. Can you tell us a bit on the ground what the situation looks like?
Well, there's about 800,000 refugees. 700,000 to 800,000 refugees. The numbers are still inaccurate because there are refugees who are stuck in their homes in the south or in the southern suburbs. Most of them are sitting in schools, in public schools and private schools, living inside the school buildings or living in parkings, public gardens, and in homes, abandoned homes, or at their relatives in the cities. The situation is it is a crisis in a way for the schools. Schools that can fit about for 300 people, it's holding about 900 people. There's a shortage of food supplies, medical help, and even in their general health. And also there's no access to milk and diapers for babies or newborns. It's a bit of a mess. People don't know where their relatives are or don't know where the people they know are, so it's a bit of a mess. It's getting better, but at the same time it's getting worse because 700,000 is a huge percentage from the Lebanese people. There's only 4 million people in Lebanon.
Can you tell us about who these refugees are and where from Lebanon they are coming from?
Well, basically, they're coming from South Lebanon and the southern suburb of Beirut. These are the two main regions, and some of them are coming from the Bekaa. The southern suburb of Beirut is an area hosting hundreds of thousands of people. It is directly 2 kilometers away or 3 kilometers away from Beirut. The south is from the Palestinian-Lebanese borders up till Beirut. They're fleeing, escaping from the south from the Palestinian-Lebanese borders till Sur, which is a city away from Beirut, around for 2 hours by car.
Mm-hmm. Bassem, maybe because you're in Beirut right now, and we here in Canada, oftentimes from the media reports that we get, have a bit of a hard time painting an accurate picture in our minds of what exactly the city of Beirut looks like right now. Maybe you can tell us what the atmosphere is like in the city, what the city looks like right now with the constant air raids, the Israeli air raids that have been happening in the city.
Well, Beirut is divided into two sections, the poor section and the rich section. The rich section is intact. The poor sections are destroyed, like the suburbs. The atmosphere during the first 10 days, the atmosphere was frightening for everyone. Just people running away, don't know where to go. And because you can hear the raids and the missiles going down into the city every single minute. Right now, in the past 4 days, it has calmed down, but you still hear the bombing from the ships and from the airplanes on the southern suburbs. Yeah. I have to understand Beirut is a very small city in the sense that its limits do not exceed more than 7 or 8 kilometers. Its radius or something like that. So wherever you are, you can hear the air raids. Now it calmed down. The life cycle has begun again. Yeah, but you can still feel the fear because of the crowd, the huge crowds being in one place. And you sense the war because you sense there's a lot of loads of crowds because of the refugees. And you just sense the fear is still going on, and because the crisis is going more and more.
Bassem, we've been having some reports of Israel impending humanitarian efforts, such as the ones being put up by Sinai Relief Center. Can you tell us a bit about what's been going on that front?
You mean about the relief front?
About Israeli impending humanitarian efforts?
Yeah, well, they attacked several trucks carrying foods. They prevented ships carrying food and supplies to enter Beirut, to enter the docks, the Beirut docks. Most of the targets are civilians. They're saying they want to open a human tunnel or an aid tunnel, but there's nothing on the ground yet. And it's they stopped on Beirut because foreigners are leaving the city. The general feeling is once everyone is out, everyone who stay in will be dead. This is what you get from talking to people on the ground. So there isn't any much hope of having such aid tunnels because there has been aid going into the country, but just disappeared. And because they were attacking trucks carrying food and supplies, so people do not have a trust, do not trust actually in having like humanitarian aid tunnels or things like that.
Thanks. Israel's stated aim has been to turn people in Lebanon against Hezbollah, who's been largely accused of creating this crisis. Can you see this happening right now in Beirut? People starting to turn against Hezbollah and speaking about how they should be disarmed, like the major media outlets seem to be saying.
Well, I don't think that Hezbollah is gaining actually more support and more sympathy because in time of war, people look for the people who are resisting, and they're the only one resisting. So it's a basic equation. There's an aggression happening, basically done mostly, 90% of it is they are attacking civilians. The Israelis are attacking civilians, and the only people on the front is Hezbollah. This is what people see in the news every day. So directly, the feeling will go up. And it's a stupid calculation to say that when the Israelis will attack Hezbollah, or because of Hezbollah kidnapped two Israeli soldiers, that people directly will hate Hezbollah for starting this war. Let us not remember the war started in 48, and in 48 and 68, with the huge military funds and funds given by the U.S. for the Israeli state. And even Hezbollah do not have an ideological position against the Jewish people. They have an ideological position against Zionism. There is somehow a political stupidity from the international community and from the U.S. and from the Israeli state when dealing with political currents in the Middle East, especially like Hezbollah in Lebanon. You cannot put Hezbollah in the same this and with Al-Qaeda as terrorists, and people actually would see there's a huge difference. So such a stupidity cannot pass easily on people. And most people, yani, there is a lot of people who disagree ideologically with Hezbollah, but they support the they support the resistance, and they're the only people who are doing the resistance right now is Hezbollah. I disagree with the way they do the resistance, but that doesn't mean that I wouldn't support the resistance itself.
And lastly, there's been many reports and news outlets these last few days about an international force to be deployed in the south of Lebanon. Do you see this as a positive development for Lebanon?
That's another occupation. This is how we've seen. This is how it is, actually. Why do you need to protect the biggest armed military state in the Middle East? They already have the arms to protect themselves. It is made to actually crush any kind of resistance. It is made to actually stop to just secure the area, give security for Israel, for the Israeli state. Basically, it would be handled as occupation, because any foreign army will only create more a messier situation, a more chaotic situation. Look what happened in Iraq. Look what happened in Palestine, in Afghanistan, all over the world. Yeah, and this strategy is going to create a huge mess, a chaos. I think this is what Rice wanted, that is a constructive disharmony. This is what they mean by disharmony, and this is, I think if they meant constructive, I don't see any construction being made.
We want to thank you very much, Bassem, for joining us on the program today. Best of luck to you and all your efforts in Beirut.
Thank you.
That was Bassem Sheet of the Sanye Relief Center speaking to us live on the phone from Beirut. And here in Montreal, if our listeners want to make donations to the Sanye Relief Center, who are helping just in a very humanitarian fashion for all the people displaced by the war against Lebanon right now, you can make donations. And you can send them in from anywhere in Canada. Checks can be made out to Medical Aid for Palestine with Lebanon written in the memo line. You can mail those to Medical Aid for Palestine, 5722 Rue Saint-André. That's Montreal, Quebec, H2S2K1. We're going to take another short musical break and come back with more guests discussing the situation unfolding right now in Lebanon. We'll be right back. Thank you. 5:26 p.m. You're tuned in to CKUT 90.3 FM Radio Tadaman, and today a panel discussing the situation that is unfolding right now as we speak in Lebanon, but also looking at the Montreal community's reaction to these Israeli attacks that have been taking place in the Middle East. We have two new guests here joining us in studio. We have Hisham Safedin, and Hisham is an independent freelance journalist working here in Montreal. Also on the phone with us, we have Wissam Moussa, who is a member of the Lebanese community. First, maybe we'll go to Wissam. Welcome to the program, Wissam.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us today.
No problem.
So maybe to start, can you explain to us how has the Lebanese community here in Montreal been reacting to these Israeli attacks on your home country?
For sure, you feel in the community that there is anger, and you have a feeling of the Lebanese are like they have powerless in front of this huge situation happening in Lebanon. They don't have any power how to stop all this war in Lebanon and all this massacre happening in their own country. And we have a big community here in Montreal. Some statistics says 50,000 Lebanese, and they're now united to really stop the massacre and try to find a solution of the crisis, because the whole country now is going down.
We've heard about a few events being organized here in Montreal. Can you tell us about what the last few days have looked like in Montreal as far as mobilization of the Lebanese community here in Montreal?
Yeah, for sure. The last week we had a civil demonstration going on, press conferences. We had the human chain at the old part of Montreal. And really the Lebanese members, not only Lebanese, non-Lebanese as well, are responding to the calls, because people are feeling that there's a danger, really. Actually, it's a big danger happening now in Lebanon. And we see a lot of support from Quebecers as well, too. So it's good to see that we have this kind of support right now.
This past Saturday has been labeled the International Day Against the Israeli Aggression in Lebanon and Gaza. Can you tell us a bit about what went on in Montreal as well as other parts of the world in terms of popular mobilizations?
Yeah, basically it was called International Day. Many cities around the world participated in this type of rally. Let's say, like in Canada, we had the Toronto, Ottawa, Vancouver, Hamilton. They all tried to make a parallel rally with Montreal. In Montreal, we were able to get some statistics say 15,000. And around the world, you had Paris, and France, London. Where London, they had also several thousands answering the call, and Australia as well. This International Day, really, we want to show to the whole world that all the world are concerned about the situation in Lebanon, and that all the world are working together toward a solution in the Middle East.
Maybe now to turn to our guest here in studio, Hisham, to look at our own government right here in Canada. And their reaction to the outbreak of the Israeli war on Lebanon. Can you talk a little bit about Canada's position and what the implications of that are?
I think from the very beginning, Canada's the government of Canada has been quite unresponsive to the demands by many Canadians to stand up and at least show some if not solidarity with the victims of this aggression, at least some sort of even-handedness, if you will. Initially, you know, the remarks by Prime Minister Harper that the response was measured has become, you know, something that's been under criticism from all sides. So I think there's really a real pressure on the government right now to change its position. However, if you look at the statements by the Foreign Minister, Peter McKay, and many other members of government, the government seems to be intent on siding with Israel. The implications of this, I think, are two implications to what's going on. The first is the way Canada is viewed in the world, and the fact that more and more people might be disillusioned, with Canada's position on the situation. So we're losing whatever remaining objectivity or sympathy that people had for Canadians when they go abroad, or you know, the ability of people to accept Canada as participating in any sort of peace mission. The other implication is actually longer term, and it has to do with the shift towards supporting U.S. policies. I mean, it's becoming more and more obvious and blatant to most people that the Harper government is simply parroting what the Washington administration is saying. So I think in that sense, what they're trying to do is to focus on the evacuation process, which has led to a lot of blame, and trying to kind of like, take the light away from the political position, whether it's at the UN or whether it is on the ground in terms of bilateral relations within in the Middle East. So I think these are the two things we have to think of when we talk about the Harper government.
Wissam, can you, since that a ceasefire doesn't seem to be forthcoming in the Middle East, and since Stephen Harper's position of unconditional support for Israel, it doesn't seem to be wavering anytime soon, can you explain us a bit of what's upcoming in terms of mobilizations of the Lebanese community in the upcoming days?
So basically, the first thing we have to do is really to tell the government that we're still here on the ground, and the Lebanese are still concerned with the problem in the Middle East, even though the international community doesn't seem to agree in a ceasefire. We still have to move and mobilize and try to move as much Canadian with us, and maybe with public opinion we can try to shift the position, at least to a neutral position of the Harper government. Meanwhile, we're also asking the government to, since Lebanon has now a big crisis, to start accepting refugees from this country. They have a great need, Lebanon needs a great need now of help from outside, and we're going toward this way also to ask the government to give some help, how he can help, not only evacuating their own citizen, but also helping the whole country. Mm-hmm. So that's actually our next two steps toward the Harper government.
Wissam, I know you yourself and others in the Lebanese community here in Montreal have been going out to the airport quite a bit over the last few days to welcome back Canadian citizens who have been evacuated from Lebanon. Can you tell us maybe the reactions of the people coming back, what that's been like?
Basically, the first thing that you can see on their face is like they're really tired. Most of them spent 72 hours and more. They don't believe how everything escalated like that. I mean, they reach Canada and they're really tired, and they have no words to describe what happened with them. I was yesterday at the airport welcoming some Lebanese family, which they need help here in Montreal because they had nothing, they had no one to help here. So we welcomed them, and they didn't say much. They were just like, I mean, they have nothing to say. I mean, they're kind of paralyzed with what happened, and they need to recover and really to try to get a new life, because now what happened, Israel completely destroyed their life in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately.
Maybe to turn another question to Hisham, looking at the media reports, especially here in Canada, there's been a lot of emphasis put on this huge evacuation plan that Canada's been carrying out. Some reports have said that it's one of the largest such evacuation procedures ever in Canadian history. But then again, we've also heard other reports and other analyses stating that once all the powerful Western countries have pulled their citizens out of Lebanon, this could actually create a potentially more disastrous, more dangerous situation on the ground. As we know, Israel killed 8 Montreal Canadian citizens last week. They were killed in their homes by a bomb. I guess in your analysis, how do you see the implications of these evacuations? What do you feel might come out of this for Lebanon after people are pulled out?
Well, on one hand, the fact that there are so many foreigners in Lebanon, in some sense, has actually increased the focus of the news on the country. So, as you mentioned quite rightly, once this evacuation process is over, and as a matter of fact, if we can speak of a lull in fighting or a toning down of the fighting for the last 2 days, it's probably because of the need to make sure that no one else is hurt. This probably will mean that once the evacuation is over, there's going to be a less direct interest in covering and in the news. And even if the news is covered, you're unlikely to see this, what I saw as a shift, a slow shift in some media outlets towards, you know, pointing the blame at Israel and still saying, despite everything, they should not have done what they're doing. So there's a real worry that following this evacuation process, you're going to see perhaps even less sympathetic, if there are any sympathetic coverage of what's going on in Lebanon. And the people there are going to lose the protection. The UN has failed in one case in one village in the south to host a family in Marwahin, the village of Marwahin, and the end result was the death of 23 people. So the UN doesn't seem to be playing the role it used to play in the 90s, even though in the 90s, actually, one of its headquarters was bombed during Incana in 1996. So there's no one to go to when it comes to the UN. Most of the refugees that are foreigners are gone out of the country. You know, it's going to be a very, very grim situation.
Back to Wissam, before we let you go, can you explain us a bit of what's the goal behind the Ottawa mobilization that's been announced for this Thursday? Can you explain what are the objectives in terms of mobilizing people and getting the government to respond?
Basically, since we chose on Thursday, our aim focus was like during open hours of the offices. Our past mobilization was like during off hours, and we really want this time to show the government employees what the government are really working toward, what the government are working now. We'll have a small delegation with a complete kit of all our concerns, all the action that we are asking, the latest casualty happened in Lebanon with all the destruction that the Israeli army did. Pictures also with that kit, and this delegation will go to the office of Minister Mackay, and we'll try to meet him if it's possible. I mean, we have nothing to lose. We'll try to meet him. Otherwise, we'll give it to his office, and we'll go outside and symbolically we'll do a human chain to really show the people that we're not forgetting what happened to Lebanon, and we're gonna still fight to the end. Till the government take a strong position and try to help us.
Thank you very much. We've been speaking with Wissam Moussa, who is a member of the Lebanese community here and who has been working very hard to organize demonstrations against the Israeli aggression in Lebanon. Thank you again, Wissam, for joining us on the program.
Thank you.
To turn back to Hisham here in the studio, maybe to put the focus a little bit on this current conflict and the way it's being framed as a conflict between Israel and Hezbollah. Oftentimes what we hear, and of course the as we were talking about before, the position that the Canadian government has taken is that Israel has the right to defend itself against against the so-called terror threat that Hezbollah poses. Maybe if we just look at that justification for the war in terms of an act of self-defense by Israel, is that something that we here in Canada should be believing, or do you feel that there are other other motives at play for this current aggression?
I think it's very hard for someone who is following closely the news to believe this claim. For the simple reason that if you look at any other conflict, including those that Canada is involved in, for example, Afghanistan, you know, we've had two soldiers die last week in Afghanistan. I don't think anyone would believe the Canadian government if the Canadian government went on and destroyed the entire infrastructure of Afghanistan, including, you know, people, homes, power stations. So this response is definitely not something that is simply connected to this capture of soldiers and self-defense. The most important, I guess, rebuttal for that is the fact that the rockets are still being launched into Israel by Hezbollah. And it's very unlikely that whatever they're doing in Lebanon is going to deter these firing of rockets. So there seems to be then another reason behind this operation. And one of the things that we need to look at is the fact that after 2000, when Israel withdrew from most of Lebanon, they've always felt perhaps that Hezbollah, is not simply a threat to Israel in terms of militarily, but actually the idea of resistance, the strength that this movement has given to other parts of the world, the fact that, for example, even inside Palestine, organizations like Hamas draw inspiration from Hezbollah and even use their own tactics, has meant for them that they are really wanted to destroy the idea of Hezbollah. So that's very important to keep in mind. And there's another angle, if I don't know if you want to talk about that, but that has to do with the regional conflicts going on, and that involves Syria and Iran and the U.S., of course.
Right. Well, talking about the wider region, even if right now the media seem to be focusing heavily on what's going on in Lebanon, we should not forget that Israel has been conducting an ongoing assault of the Gaza Strip following the kidnapping by Hamas of one Israeli soldier. How do you view those two operations as related, if they are?
I think that they're definitely related in the sense that there seems to be a change or a shift in the way people view the conflict with Israel. If you look back 10 or 15 years ago, this idea of solidarity, although it's always been present in the minds and hearts of ordinary people, has never been kind of really put in place in some sort of strategy. Ever since the 1967 war, kind of defeatism has been ruling the thoughts of people. And so you will find that Israel is probably very worried about this notion that when fighting the Palestinians, they have to worry about other fronts. And that's why I think this response has been so, I would characterize it as entirely even irrational, even from a strategically point of view, because there's really this worry that this kind of coordination between these fronts is very dangerous to Israel. So we have, you know, I'm not saying that these operations were planned in a coordinated fashion. You know, we don't know really, but the fact, the timing of this is really very significant, regardless of whether it was pre-planned as a joint operation.
Maybe one last question for you, Hisham. Looking ahead to the coming days, weeks, as we see that this conflict, unfortunately, is not showing signs of slowing down, where do you see it going now, and what do you think needs to be done for a real solution to take place to the problem?
Well, it's probably, you know, it's very hard to predict the future when it comes to politics. But what I can say is this, as you mentioned, it doesn't look like it's going to let down anytime soon. What I think is going on right now is that Israel seems to feel that this ongoing massive campaign of bombardment and laying to waste an entire country is starting to backfire, you know, slowly but surely that's what's happening. So what they're trying to do, in my opinion, is that they're trying to find another bargaining chip, because they thought if we do this, you know, we're going to turn the people of Lebanon against Hezbollah, we're going to probably destroy the support of Hezbollah, eventually they will succumb to our demands. That is not happening. So what they started doing a couple of days ago is grabbing territory. What I think might happen, this is one scenario, is that they will try to grab as much territory as they can without jeopardizing their soldiers and switch from this all-out massive war, which might take, you know, might go on for another week or two perhaps, and then start negotiating using this kind of territory. Now, we have to keep in mind that this idea that we mentioned before of forces coming into Lebanon, especially if they're NATO forces, is completely untenable when it comes to people in the south. So this means that actually any kind of attempt to end these hostilities based on an introduction of foreign forces, especially if they are fighting force as opposed to a UN UNIFIL force, is not going to happen. So I think we will see a slowing down of this operation in 2 or 3 weeks. But as long as they are inside Lebanon, unfortunately, this means that there will be no complete ceasefire. There will be acts of resistance, and you will see continuous fighting along these specific borders. The rules of the game have changed, but we don't know exactly how much they have changed.
We've been speaking with Hisham Safedin, joining us here in the CKUT studios. Hisham is an independent journalist based here in Montreal. Thank you very much, Hisham.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to go now to a report from Pacifica's Democracy Now! This was just aired today. We'll be hearing two interviews. One is with Peter Bouquert, who is the Emergencies Director for Human Rights Watch, currently based in Beirut. And another interview with Daher Jamal, who is an independent reporter who followed the situation in Iraq very closely. He is also in Beirut right now. We'll be back very soon here on Radio Tadaman, CKUT 90.3 FM.
The United Nations has launched an emergency appeal for the international community to help the people of Lebanon. Emergency Relief Coordinator Yang Eglin said $150 million is urgently needed. A total of about 800,000 people have been forced to flee their homes. Food, water, fuel, medical supplies are running out in parts of the country. The UN says entire communities have been cut off from the world because Israel systematically destroyed Lebanon's network of roads and bridges. Meanwhile, questions are being raised as Israel violating international law. On Sunday, UN High Commissioner Louise Arbour told CNN Israel's actions in Lebanon could lead to the prosecution of its military commanders. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch says Israel is shelling civilian areas with cluster bombs. On Monday, Democracy Now! Reached Peter Bouquert. He is the Emergencies Director for Human Rights Watch, currently in Beirut. He began by talking about the humanitarian situation on the ground.
Well, I've been working in war zones for Human Rights Watch for the last decade almost, from Kosovo to Afghanistan and Iraq and Chechnya and Sierra Leone. And in terms of the dangers that we face out on the roads, this definitely qualifies as one of the most dangerous places in the world right now. It's very difficult to deliver humanitarian aid to the south, and villages throughout the south continue to suffer from heavy bombardment. We document case after case of civilian homes which have been hit in the south, where entire families have been wiped out. I mean, one of the issues I've been absolutely shocked about in terms of this conflict is the number of children who've been killed, because in almost all of the cases that we're documenting, we're talking about a civilian home which is hit, and the parents are killed along with 4 or 5, sometimes 6 children, some as young as 1 year old. The youngest casualty that we've documented so far is 2 months old. It's very difficult to deliver aid to those villages in the south and in the Bekaa Valley, which are subject to the bombardment that we see. It's almost impossible for the humanitarian community to get the kind of safe passage guarantees that they need to be able to work down there and to get their trucks down there to deliver humanitarian supplies. And even ambulances have been hit in the south in the last few days. On the other side of the coin, it's also very difficult for civilians who are stuck in these villages in the south to leave their homes, even though Israel has ordered the immediate evacuation of all villages south of the Litani. We're talking about tens of thousands of people who are effectively stuck in this very active war zone. who are unable to flee because they're too afraid to travel on the roads. Just yesterday, on Sunday, we documented more than 10 cases of civilian cars which were hit in the south. More than 40 people were wounded and 8 or 9 people were killed simply for trying to flee to safety. So it really is a very, very desperate situation throughout Lebanon these days. Just a few days ago, we documented an attack which took place last Wednesday on the village of Blida, in which the Israelis used cluster munitions. Human Rights Watch has been very critical of the use of cluster munitions by the U.S. military because these are indiscriminate weapons. Basically, what they are is one big shell which opens up and drops a number of smaller bomblets over a very large area. Many of these bomblets don't explode, so they are effectively turned into mines. In this one attack that we documented, one elderly woman was killed and 12 people were wounded from one family, including 7 children. The husband of the family lost both of his legs, and I interviewed him in the hospital 2 days ago. So we're very concerned that Israel is using these indiscriminate weapons, cluster bombs, in populated areas. It's simply not acceptable. And is a violation of the Geneva Conventions because these are indiscriminate and very, very dangerous weapons.
Peter Buckard of Human Rights Watch also talked about the plight of Lebanon's refugees.
The Nations has estimated that there's up to 500,000 displaced people in Lebanon today. That's almost a quarter of the population of Lebanon. And I think those numbers are quite accurate. There's more than 100 schools in Beirut alone who've been packed with refugees. Yesterday, we visited an underground parking lot of a major shopping center where refugees are sleeping on two separate levels of the parking lot. And we go around on a daily basis to school after school after school, where every classroom has been taken over by multiple families. And they're not just people fleeing from the south, but also those from Beirut itself, especially from the southern suburbs, who have lost their homes in this very fierce bombardment of the southern suburbs, the Shia-dominated suburbs of Lebanon. I can't emphasize just how vast the destruction is in the southern suburbs. Walking around there is just a stunning experience. You know, you're walking around and looking at these 14-story apartment buildings who've just been completely taken down, and you wonder what the military purpose Israel hopes to achieve by taking down these civilian apartment buildings. Certainly, there were in some of these neighborhoods some minor Hezbollah offices. For example, in one neighborhood we visited, there was a co-op run by Hezbollah and a political office. We don't think it justifies the kind of massive destruction that Israel is causing in these civilian neighborhoods of South Beirut. I think it's time for the international community to step in and to stop this onslaught on the civilian population of Lebanon. This is totally different from the kind of bombardment that we saw in Iraq and Afghanistan. Certainly, we documented a lot of civilian casualties in Iraq and Afghanistan when we worked there. But at least in most of those cases, we were able to determine what the specific military objective was that the U.S. hoped to achieve by these military strikes. In the case of Lebanon, it's very, very difficult for us to see, as Human Rights Watch, what specific military objective Israel is trying to achieve by bombarding the civilian homes in the south and the civilian neighborhoods of southern Beirut. It certainly seems very far removed from fighting a war directly with Hezbollah.
Peter Buckhart is Emergencies Director for Human Rights Watch. He was speaking to us from Beirut. Well, Human Rights Watch is accusing Israel of using cluster bombs. The Lebanese president, Emil Lahoud, says Israel is also using white phosphorus. Lebanese doctors have reported witnessing the effects of white phosphorus on their patients. Independent journalist Dar Jamal is in Beirut and has spoken to some of those doctors. We reached him earlier today.
Yesterday, I went to the Beirut University Hospital. It's one of the larger hospitals in Beirut, and I was speaking with the assistant director there. His name is Bilal Masri, and he told me, first off, we were talking about the casualty situation, and then this led into the white phosphorus situation in southern Lebanon. And first off, he said that they were receiving very many casualties there, mostly from the south, being brought in to them by the Red Crescent and Lebanese Red Cross, and that 55% of all the casualties in Beirut, according to Mr. Masri, were children 15 years or younger. He then said another startling statistic, that 30% of all the casualties are dying, and this was an extremely high casualty rate, that far higher than anything they saw during the Lebanese Civil War, meaning that of everyone hit, 30% of the people are dying outright. And I asked him why, and he said that it's because the Israelis are using these bombs that can penetrate through bomb shelters, that there's been so many refugees seeking shelter in basements or in bomb shelters. And the Israelis are bombing the bomb shelters. Warplanes are bombing the bomb shelters where refugees are hiding. And also that there was such a disproportionate number of children being killed and wounded because children, he said, were the least able to really escape when the bombings began. Children were the least able to really effectively run away and get to safety themselves. While we were talking, he said that it was actually confirmed by the Ministry of the Interior in Lebanon that the minister himself did confirm that the Israelis have dropped white phosphorus in southern Lebanon. And interestingly, just before I had gone to this hospital, I was at a refugee camp in a city park in downtown Beirut, and I interviewed an old man, a 76-year-old baker, who had told me that they fled Napatia down in southern Lebanon, which is the city where it is suspected that this white phosphorus has been used and where it was confirmed by the Ministry of the Interior. And this old man told me that they left because when the bombing there began, this was within the first few days of the attack, within the first week, that is, I'm sorry, that he left because his family was so afraid, because nearby where they lived, homes were being bombed, and inside the buildings and outside the buildings, they were glowing, as he described it. He said there were fires that, of course, we know what regular fire looks like, but this was not that, that the buildings were glowing. We were all very afraid. We didn't want to get anywhere near it, and they kept bombing, and so we decided to leave. But without a doubt, I think the most important thing that people need to understand right now is that the Israelis are using white phosphorus in southern Lebanon, and also it's been unconfirmed, but the Lebanese army is reporting that they are using dropping cluster bombs from warplanes as well, and other illegal munitions also, but that as of yet to be confirmed by an independent source.
Independent journalist Dar Jamal speaking to us from Beirut.
And that was a report from Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! From today's program. Again, Dahar Jamal and Peter Bukert of the Human Rights Watch.
So once again, if you want to voice your outrage at the Israeli assault on Lebanon and Gaza, we invite you to participate at the Human Chain in Ottawa, the Department of Foreign Affairs. This is coordinated with a call-in day. So people are asked to gather at 8:30 in the morning at 3300 Cremazie East near Metro Saint-Michel. Buses leave Montreal at 9 a.m. sharp. To reserve your seats, please call 514-222-0205 or 514-586-4415. This is called by groups including Tedamon, the Association des étudiants libanais musulmans, and the Al-Hadaya Association of Montreal. If you want to donate to the relief effort in Beirut and want to be updated on the upcoming actions in Montreal and elsewhere in Canada, log in to tedamon.resist.ca on the web or write us at tedamon@resist.ca. This was Radio Tedamon on CKUT 90.3 FM. Thanks for being with us.
There is this thing going on.
What?
You realize
our consciousness is affected.
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news brought to you live.
And and you have been listening to Off the Hour, CKUT 90.3 FM, a special segment to Daman Radio, produced by Montreal's Community News Collective here at CKUT Radio. If you want more information or to get involved, you can call 514-398-4616 or send an email to news@ckut.ca. Stay tuned. Native Solidarity News is coming right up.